a difference a week makes. Opportunity to have a little time off. Do, as I have told so many people, absolutely nothing. Didn't go anyplace. I mean, the things I did, things I would ordinarily be doing. I think the most strenuous activity I had on my week off was hanging pictures in my daughter's room. Kind of wore me out, too. Had to take a nap. Had to take a lot of naps. Of course, that's what a week off is for. And now that it's over, we're back live with you this Monday on Issues, Etc. It is the 21st of November, and we've got a full lineup for the program today for the next 3 hours or so. In the first hour, we're going to be listening to, this is one of those house cleaning items, one of these things left over from before I went on vacation for a week, PBS Frontline. This program, this news magazine on PBS, had a special a couple weeks ago called The Last Abortion Clinic. And one of the things that it deals with is a case that will be, at the end of this month, more than likely, on the docket of the U.S. Supreme Court. And it is one of the first real abortion cases to hit the Supreme Court in, well, a fair amount of time. Part of what that's about, we're going to be hearing about the first half of that Frontline special here in the first hour of Issues, Etc., stopping and starting and commenting on it as well. And then we'll also save a couple other segments of it for tomorrow and the next day. This is a short week, by the way. Thanksgiving's coming up on Thursday, but we'll be coming to you live Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday this week on Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Then in the second hour of the program, Pastor Todd Peppercorn will be our guest. He had an opportunity to see the newly minted Harry Potter movie. They're saying this one is genuinely PG-13, and this one is, at least from the review I heard, the best so far. Well, we'll find out what it's all about with Pastor Todd Peppercorn in the first half hour of the second hour of Issues, Etc. today. He's from youth magazine called Higher Things. Then, at 4:30, for about 10 minutes, Dr. Patty Nason is going to join us. We'll talk with her about a recent Charles Krauthammer column. You saw this? Fraud in Kansas, Sense in Pennsylvania? My man, Charles Krauthammer, someone who I admire greatly in many other respects, says intelligent design is a fraud. Well, we'll get the reaction from Dr. Patty Nason of the Institute for Creation Research in the second hour of the program. Then to round off that second hour, we'll be talking with Uwe Simonetto. We're beginning with him a series on lay vocation. And we're going to start with his vocation, that is of a journalist. He'll be with us in the last hour of Issues, Etc. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You know, over the years, I've watched an awful lot of PBS's Frontline. I've come to admire this news magazine. I don't always agree with the positions that they take, but I think in the, and I know people probably, their hair will stand on, and I think in the long run, it's fairly balanced treatment of the issues that it deals with. Well, it had a special couple weeks ago called The Last Abortion Clinic. We're going to be playing it for you here in the first hour. And as we stop and start, feel free to join us. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. This aired a couple weeks ago. It's from PBS's Frontline, called The Last Abortion Clinic.
Judge Roberts, I do not intend to ask you whether you were overruled Roe versus Wade. I will ask questions about precedents as they bear on Roe versus Wade.
As a new Supreme Court takes shape, the fate of Roe v. Wade has drawn headlines once again. But for the last decade,
Senate comes to order.
A different abortion battle has been raging.
We've had 20 states pass 27 bills that directly restrict abortion access.
Tonight, Frontline examines the abortion wars.
Women are being hurt, women are suffering, and no one's speaking out.
Being waged in states throughout the country.
There is only one abortion clinic left in Mississippi, and we are hoping that that won't be here long.
Mama, please let me live. I want to see your face, Mama. I want to see your
Say, this love endures forever. For he is good, he is above our faith. This love endures forever. Sing praise.
July day in Jackson, Mississippi, over 100 pro-life activists have gathered outside the city's abortion clinic.
For he is good and he is above our faith.
The rally was organized by Pro-Life Mississippi, the most powerful right-to-life group in the state.
One of our slogans for Pro-Life Mississippi is to make Mississippi the first abortion-free state in the nation.
Terry Herring is the group's president. Since Pro-Life Mississippi was founded more than a decade ago, they've helped close down 5 abortion clinics across the state. Years ago, the group moved their offices to this building in Jackson, right next door to an abortion clinic. Last year, that clinic closed its doors for good.
People have persistently and continually said that we do not want abortion in Mississippi.
Herring's group has now focused their efforts on this clinic, the Jackson Women's Health Organization. The site of today's rally and protest every single day that it's open. It is the last abortion clinic in the entire state of Mississippi.
People are faithful to be there when the doors are open, and it makes it very uncomfortable. And I think it should be uncomfortable to go in someplace and kill your unborn baby.
He wins every battle, say, he wins every battle.
With their success in Mississippi, Herring and her group are seen as leaders in the pro-life movement. And their tactics reflect a dramatic change in that movement's strategy. During the 1980s and early 90s, the pro-life movement became known for the actions of extreme groups who firebombed clinics, held violent protests, harassed, and in some cases even killed doctors who performed abortions. While a few extremists still pursue these tactics, Herring's group in Mississippi distances itself from them.
The pro-life movement has been perceived as being very radical. I think it did alienate people, and so I think we've had to backtrack from there and say, you know, we've got to do a lot more educating, we've got to do a lot more lobbying, we've got to do this legally the best way that we can.
Now, the one thing, I'm pausing here for a moment, because there's a strategy down there in Mississippi, and did you hear that, folks? Last, that's why it's called the last abortion clinic in the entire state of Mississippi. And this Pro-Life Mississippi group is setting its sights on that last abortion clinic. One of their strategies, did you hear that before? They're buying property adjacent to existing abortion clinics. Now, this is a smart strategy. Think about it. It's expensive. It could be potentially very expensive, but in the long run, it pays off if you want to establish a legal presence near an abortion clinic. You own the land. It's your property then. And what it means is you've got to be willing to pay for the land. You got to be willing to go out there and do what it takes to get that land. But how important is it to you? So their goal is to be the first abortion-free state in the U.S. No abortion clinics. Now, I don't know if that means abortion-free, just because there are no abortion clinics, but that's a good start. But the other thing that I want you to pay attention here as we listen to this Frontline special from PBS, The Last Abortion Clinic, is that the strategy, perhaps in the last 10 years of the pro-life movement, has changed. It's changed from a direct assault on Roe to an indirect assault, kind of a flanking maneuver, talking more about abortion regulation than making abortion illegal. Perhaps even regulating it out of existence. And maybe the pro-life movement has realized that there are no quick fixes for this problem, especially one that's 30 years old. Let's go back to this Frontline special, The Last Abortion Clinic.
And that's exactly what Herring has done. Far from the sidewalk battles at abortion clinics, Herring wields her most effective power in the halls of the state capitol,
She's considered the most powerful pro-life lobbyist in the state.
Individuals such as Terry Herring and others across our state help to energize members of the legislature. It is extremely helpful and enlightening to have information from people who believe very strongly in the pro-life issues.
Senator Tolleson, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam President. I move.
Amy Tuck is the Lieutenant Governor of Mississippi and is a strong pro-life advocate. Last year, Mississippi enacted more pro-life legislation than any other state in the country.
It's passed overwhelmingly, and it's bipartisan support. It's Democrats and Republicans. It's the House of Representatives and the Senate.
Senate stands in recess, subject to call of the chair.
Mississippi is truly a pro-life state.
Thank you, Katie. Praise God. We thank you, Lord, that this clinic is closed down, that the last remaining abortion clinic in Mississippi cannot stand before the living God.
Mississippi's success in regulating abortion has put them at the forefront of the latest battleground in the abortion wars.
And we just thank you, Father, for blessing our efforts.
This is the story of that battleground.
Jesus. Amen.
And it begins 33 years ago, far from Mississippi. In the halls of the Supreme Court with the landmark decision Roe v. Wade.
One of the very, very biggest fights in abortion politics for 40 years has been, what kind of deference do we give to local standards? That's what Roe v. Wade was about. Roe v. Wade wasn't about whether abortion is right or wrong. Roe v. Wade was about whether states were going to be allowed to write their own abortion laws or not.
And in that decision, the court spoke clearly. Calling abortion a fundamental right, they imposed severe limitations on any state's ability to restrict it.
Roe v. Wade said that states are not free to restrict abortion or impede a woman's ability to get an abortion in the first trimester.
Catherine Colbert is a leading lawyer in the pro-choice movement.
In the second trimester, states could restrict abortion, but they have to do so in a way that's really furthering women's health. They can't just willy-nilly enact restrictions that intended to discourage her decision. And in the last trimester, that is, past the point of viability, states could ban abortion as long as there was an exception for the woman's life or health. From almost day one after Roe was decided by the Supreme Court, legislators who opposed abortion came in and tried to pass restrictions.
For nearly two decades, lawyers like Colbert were largely successful in overturning those restrictions. But in 1989, a Supreme Court decision known as Webster gave the pro-life movement a boost when four justices indicated they were ready to consider overturning Roe v. Wade.
What Webster did is it emboldened those who wanted to push the question. And it said to them, okay, it's all right. There's four votes here on this court to overrule Roe. We can pass bans on abortion. Let's do that and get the question directly before the court.
Among those emboldened to push the question was this man, former Pennsylvania state senator and longtime nemesis of the pro-choice movement, Stephen Friend.
I'm not trying to make myself more important than I am, but whenever I ran, my races were followed nationally. I was the number one national target in 1990 of the National Abortion Rights Action League, which incidentally I consider a very great honor.
To the surprise of absolutely no one, the purpose of this news conference is to unveil the Abortion Control Act of 1989.
Pennsylvania's Abortion Control Act of 1989 challenged Roe directly, calling for restrictions on abortion during the first trimester.
There are five major goals to the legislation.
Among the restrictions was what's known as an informed consent law, which required a woman seeking an abortion to receive state-mandated information from her abortion provider, and then wait at least 24 hours before receiving the procedure.
Legislation like this is a vehicle for a court to have the opportunity to overturn Roe versus Wade. If God himself came down to the nine justices and explained to them the error of their ways, and they were now 100% against Roe versus Wade, 100% pro-life, they couldn't do anything to change it until there were an appropriate case or controversy dealing with the abortion issue before them.
By January 1992, Friends Law had given the court such a case.
I am Catherine Colbert. I am an attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union's Reproductive Freedom Project.
Planned Parenthood, with Colbert as their lawyer, had challenged the law all the way to the Supreme Court.
It is our view that the question before the court is whether or not Roe versus Wade remains the law of the land.
The case would be known as Casey, named after the Pennsylvania governor who had signed Friend's bill into law.
Whether all women in this nation have a fundamental right to choose abortion.
Pro life, your name's a lie, you don't care if women die.
The hype back and forth was, could this be it? Could this be the ballgame?
We're now on the verge of total victory, aren't we? And it may well be the Pennsylvania Abortion Control Act that puts Roe versus Wade where it belongs, and that's in the trash can.
We were ready. We had the bill almost completely drafted to be the first state in the union to not limit or restrict, but to end the nightmare once and for all and outlaw abortion. It would have passed.
We were pretty clear that there were 5 votes on the Supreme Court to overrule Roe. I was shocked at what happened.
The ruling was decided by a 5-4 vote, and neither side had won. The joint opinion, delivered by Justices O'Connor, Souter, and Kennedy, crafted a middle position. They upheld Roe, but changed the standard by which abortion laws would be judged. Rejecting what they called Roe's rigid trimester framework, they established instead the undue burden standard. A law would be invalid, they declared, if it placed substantial obstacles in the path of a woman seeking an abortion.
In the scheme of what could have happened, this was a tremendous victory. We thought that the Supreme Court was ready to totally eliminate protection from abortion. So we won in the sense that that didn't happen.
But what had happened would dramatically change the landscape of abortion politics.
People got the impression that abortion was safe, Roe v. Wade was safe. All the pro-choice people went home. But what happened is pro-lifers started to pass legislation to test what exactly is an undue burden. Let's pass this bill. Is that undue? Let's pass that bill. Is that undue? And let's see where the courts draw the line.
Now, this is key. This is absolutely key. First of all, I'm greatly enjoying listening to this Frontline program again because it occurred to me this is a good primer in the recent history of legislation affecting Roe v. Wade. I mean, everyone is so very concerned about Judge Alito and his nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court and that he might actually represent a shift on the court, not a Roe overturning court. That would take, I think, even one more. But a shift in the court on cases that are testing things like what is an undue burden, this concept set up by the Casey decision. You listen to Issues Etc. We're back live this Monday. It's the 21st of November. We're listening to PBS's Frontline program from several weeks ago called The Last Abortion Clinic, talking about abortion regulation, and a little later they may get into the subject of this case that is pending before the U.S. Supreme Court as we speak for later this month. And perhaps since Casey, the biggest court case on Roe, on abortion, to come before the U.S. Supreme Court. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727.
Hello, Americans United for Life.
Americans United for Life is the oldest national pro-life group in the country.
Richter was arguing on behalf of the state version of the Hyde Amendment.
Headquartered in Chicago, AUL is a group made up primarily of lawyers. Their motto is changing law to protect human life state by state.
On behalf of the state version, which was the Illinois statute that...
Peter Samuelson is the group's president.
So by ACOG coming out, it ought to make our life easier.
We're always looking for new ideas that fit within the space that Casey said you can regulate abortion. We'll give advice as pro-lifers who have thought through these issues as to perhaps the ideal type of law that we would like to see that remains constitutional. AUL is very incremental. We want to see a law go into effect. We're not trying to get everything at once. We think we'd like to do what is possible and what the public will support.
3 years before O'Connor used the...
When we find those ideas, we take them out to legislators and we take them out to ally groups that we've worked with over the last several decades. In most states, we have a variety of relationships, three, four, half a dozen relationships of legislators and allied advocates who have been working on these issues year in, year out, and we'll start engaging in a conversation with them.
In the months after Casey, one of AUL's first stops was the Mississippi State Legislature.
The Casey decision opened the door for us to begin to figure out, okay, what can we do as Mississippians to reflect our values in our state laws?
Alan Nunley is a senior state senator and chairs the Public Health and Welfare Committee. Working with AUL, he drafted an informed consent requirement that went even further than the one in Friends, Pennsylvania law.
We required the informed consent to be doctor to patient, face to face, to include a booklet of color pictures showing pictures involving fetal development and requiring the doctor to point out to this woman, okay, this is where your child fits into this spectrum of pictures. Also, the woman had to be informed of the risk and the dangers associated with the abortion procedure.
The Senate comes to order. If you would come to the Senate chamber as we...
In the years since Casey, Mississippi has enacted 10 laws regulating abortion, including one of the strictest parental consent laws in the nation.
We're going to pause here as we go into this break. Do you agree with this pro-life strategy? Now, they're talking here on this Frontline program, the Last Abortion Clinic, about Mississippi in particular. Now they're talking about Americans United for Life and their nationwide strategy. What they've been focusing on in the state of Mississippi that is now down to one abortion clinic in the entire state. Do you agree with this, I guess you could call it incrementalism, taking some preemptive action, not necessarily aiming directly at Roe, regulating abortion where you can, especially after the Casey decision, creating circumstances, as you heard about in that Pennsylvania law, so that the court will have to test its own standard. A state-by-state strategy? You know, if Roe is ever overturned, that's where it will be. That will be the strategy from that point on, a state-by-state strategy. Testing what undue burden means, what the court meant by undue burden in Casey, and then looking for laws that kind of knock at the edges of abortion, like informed consent, the one they're talking about there in Mississippi, or parental notification. Missourians are very familiar with that one lately, even parental consent. Do you agree with the strategy? Give me your answers during this break. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Lutheran Reformation began when Martin Luther posted the 95 Theses at the church door in Wittenberg. The Reformation began there, but it certainly didn't end there. For the next six decades, Luther and the other reformers compiled documents, confessions, and statements of faith. We call these the Book of Concord, the Lutheran Confessions. Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November is called Concordia, the Lutheran Confessions, a reader's edition of the Book of Concord. This book is $20.99 plus shipping and handling. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours. The number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Ask for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, Concordia, a reader's edition of the Book of Concord.
Prejudice is everywhere. Here's a Global Minute focus on the nearly 1,600,000 Hazara people who live in the central mountains of Afghanistan. Apart from wounded soldiers assisted by their government, their state of health care is dismal, worse than any other ethnic group in the country. The Global Prayer Digest magazine reports Hazara people are living longer, but their elderly remain very underserved. This is partly due to being looked down on by the other ethnic communities, largely comprised of Sunni Muslims, which have far more political power than the Shiite Muslim Hazaras. Pray the small number of Christians in Afghanistan will reach out to their Hazari neighbors and have opportunities to share about God, who's no respecter of persons, and tell of his offer of eternal salvation. Pray for better medical care, too. Learn more about Muslims at our Listener's Corner on missionvisionnetwork.org. missionvisionnetwork.org.
The Meyer Minute is underwritten by the North St. Louis County Chapter of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, including Chapel of the Cross Lutheran Church on Benham Road and Grace Chapel Lutheran Church on Lance Drive.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Someone crying is not unusual, but this woman was crying with an open Bible upside down on top of her head. That's right, she was crying, and on top of her head, much like a bonnet, was an open Bible. "What's the problem?" the missionary asked. She explained she couldn't read and was praying to God to make the Bible's message sink into her head. Now another story, this from a foreign country as well. Village people had heard that the power of God is in the Bible. The problem was the villagers had not learned how to access that power, how to read and understand God's word. So they did what came naturally to them. Since their native religion was magic, they shredded pages from their Bibles and mixed the paper with the native magical potions. Yesterday, many churches observed Bible Sunday. Of course, those stories aren't your story, but is the underlying theme the same? I've heard this is a great book, but I've been frustrated in trying to understand it. Today's Minute is a plug for the American Bible Society. Its mission is to make the Bible available to every person in a language and format each can understand and afford, so all people may experience its life-changing message. Check out the website, www.americanbible.org. The Word of God is living and active, Hebrews 4:12. Yesterday we learned on our Bible study program that the high priest was to be a descendant of Aaron. Yet Jesus is described as a priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. What's going on? We'll talk about it next time on our Bible study program in Hebrews chapter 5 with Pastor John Lukomsky. The Bible Study. It comes your way weekday mornings at 10:05.
The Bible Study on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Concordia Christian Books and Gifts, serving God's people.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're coming to you live this Monday, the 21st of November, back from some days of vacation. We're listening to the Frontline PBS special, The Last Abortion Clinic. We're going to hear about the first half of it before this first hour is out, and then we'll hear the other parts in the next 2 days of Issues Etc. Kind of give you a chance to digest a lot of information that you're hearing in this television special. And then in the second hour of the program, Pastor Todd Peppercorn will join us. We'll talk about the new Harry Potter movie. You know, you hear us talk about one of our underwriters, LCMS World Relief, and so often we talk about LCMS World Relief when it comes to things like hurricanes and tsunamis and earthquakes, those disasters that happen. And then when they're over, after a few years, it's all cleaned up. There's an ongoing disaster, and that is the disaster of legalized abortion here in the U.S., and LCMS World Relief is concerned about that as well. They have a division called LCMS Life Ministries. It's part of LCMS World Relief. To find out more about them, to donate, go to our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Our recent Image of God Bioethics Conference, sponsored by LCMS Life Ministries. A guest that we have on a regular basis here, Maggie Corner, she heads up LCMS Life Ministries. They also have a toll-free number, 1-888-930-4438, 1-888-930-4438, LCMS World Relief and LCMS Life Ministries. Well, so far, the outline of the strategy down there in Mississippi is intriguing. I mean, these people, if someone's on the cutting edge of the pro-life movement in terms of legislation, in terms of the courts, in terms of lobbying, in terms of trying to make a case state by state, that even if Roe is never overturned, Mississippi might be able to say in time, we're an abortion-free state. And what they saw in the Casey decision was an opportunity with regard to the U.S. Supreme Court to slowly chip away at Roe rather than perhaps tackle the whole thing at once. Now, Mississippi is the subject here, and we go back to the state of legislation, abortion regulation in Mississippi.
In the years since Casey, Mississippi has enacted 10 laws regulating abortion, including one of the strictest parental consent laws in the nation. It requires both parents' permission before a minor can have an abortion.
The ayes have it. Senate stands in recess till 2.
Their tactics changed. They began to see, we have political clout now. And so while we have this power, we're going to chip away at Roe versus Wade until the law is going to be on the books, but nobody will be able to access the service.
Betty Thompson is the former director of the Jackson Women's Health Organization, Mississippi's last remaining abortion clinic. She now consults for the clinic part-time.
Women are having the same type of obstacles placed before them in trying to access an abortion if they need one or if they choose to have one, as they did before Roe versus Wade.
Jesus loves the little children.
Thompson says the problems with Mississippi's strict abortion regulations are compounded by a lack of access to abortion providers in the state.
When we became the only abortion providers in the state, it was a heavy blow to women in Mississippi.
I love you, Mama. Please let me live. I want to see your face, Mama. Please let me live.
We're the only clinic there.
It's gonna hurt, Mama. It's gonna hurt.
So it's either go to Jackson Women's Health or go out of the state.
The Jackson Clinic declined Frontline's request to film inside the facility. Instead, we traveled across the Mississippi border, as 60% of women seeking abortions in Mississippi now do, to a clinic in a neighboring state.
Now, this raises another question. First of all, it occurs to me, do you think Mississippi is unique? I mean, that argument might be made. Mississippi is a solidly southern state, near the buckle of the Bible Belt, and it might be unique. I mean, what could happen in Mississippi may not be able to happen anyplace else. Well, sure, they can do that in Mississippi. They can pass 10 laws since Casey to chip away at Roe v. Wade. They can get it down to one abortion clinic. So maybe they're unique. What do you think? 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Now, attendant to that is what was just mentioned. What it's doing essentially is driving those who want abortion outside the state. So they're going to neighboring states for abortions. Missouri is watching this as Missouri successfully continues to regulate abortion in its own borders. More and more people are going across the river to Illinois, where no such regulations are even being contemplated in the near future. So you can have an essentially abortion-free state. Maybe Mississippi gets it down to zero abortion clinics, but the residents still leave to have abortions. This is why it can't just be a state strategy, but it has to be a state-by-state strategy. So with these kind of, one might say these are weaknesses in the strategy. Do you think the strategy of incrementalism, state by state, law by law, is insufficient? Give us a call, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
Because of security concerns and as a condition of our filming, we agreed not to identify the location of the clinic, its name, or the names of the people who work there. This clinic has been open for over two decades.
Good morning. How's it going so far?
Its owner started it in the years after Roe, when access to abortion was virtually non-existent in the South.
14 doc sessions, one mifeprex scheduled.
As abortion providers, particularly in the Deep South, we feel very, very isolated. One of the most difficult things about providing care out in the hinterland is that it does seem that people are very unaware of what's going on and how women are suffering.
With clinics closing throughout the South, this one sees women from all over the region.
The clinic serves women from approximately a 200-mile radius. Because Mississippi is so restrictive, because there's only one clinic left, we do see women traveling from Mississippi.
Angela, you'll come with me.
The clinic only offers abortions 3 days a week. Their schedule is always full, but they can't find enough doctors willing to perform the procedure.
One of the problems is that so few doctors are trained, it's not considered a part of standard medical care.
I'm going to get you to lay on back and get you as comfortable as possible.
Okay.
And there is such a level of harassment and discrimination around doctors providing abortion care that it makes it really difficult to find physicians that are brave enough and willing to provide care.
Okay, first of all, you know that basically you can have the baby and put it up for adoption.
Every day, the clinic receives hundreds of calls from women inquiring about the procedure.
I think that probably you were thinking about emergency contraception, but that doesn't work for you if you're already pregnant.
Now, we're getting a peek there inside an abortion clinic in a neighboring state. This is not inside that last abortion clinic in Mississippi. They weren't going to let Frontline's cameras in there. We're listening to PBS special Frontline called The Last Abortion Clinic. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Another factor you want to toss in there was just mentioned before we go to these phone calls, and that is doctors willing to do abortions. It has been a debate in the 90s whether or not medical schools, major medical schools in the U.S., should be required to teach and that their students be required to take training in abortions. And for the most part, medical schools opted to say, no, if you want the training, we'll provide the training, but we're not going to make it mandatory to a medical education, which means fewer and fewer doctors know how, fewer and fewer doctors are trained to do, and fewer and fewer doctors, one would hope, are willing to do abortions. And that in and of itself may be a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, think about that. You'll have fewer doctors. But the doctors who do abortions will be very busy men or women. They may not always be the best either. Which makes abortion more dangerous, and of course that ought to also be a concern for the pro-life community. I mean, think about it. If abortion were what the pro-choice side says it is, medical procedure akin to having your appendix taken out. I don't know of any doctors who are unwilling to take out appendices. I don't know of any of them who say, no, I don't do that. I'm sorry. Or, I'm sorry, a surgeon, an abdominal surgeon says, I'm sorry, they didn't train me to do that in medical school. No. If it were akin to taking out your appendix or having your tonsils out, is it just our old backward, old-fashioned stigma that we attach to abortion? Or do doctors themselves realize that there really is something different between extracting a baby dead from a woman's womb and taking out an appendix? I mean, if it is, as so many contend it is, just another medical procedure, what would the doctors be ashamed of? Let's talk with Carla, who calls from her car. Carla, thank you for waiting. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, yes, thank you for taking my call. I was able to watch the Frontline show, and I was honestly very excited about the smart way they're going about chiseling away at Roe versus Wade versus waiting for it to be completely overthrown on a federal level. I'm, you know, excited to see this smart strategy and utilizing the method of making it as difficult as possible and, you know, not letting the doctors feel as if it is mainstream and that it is like taking out an appendix, because it isn't. It is forcing your own choice of not having a child. You've just taken that choice away from that child of having life. So to me, I'm obviously pro-life, but I'm very excited about what they had to say there.
What do you think about this strategy? I'm glad you're excited about it as well. I'm glad you had an opportunity to see it, Carla. What would you say about, how would you respond to someone who says that this strategy doesn't move fast enough? I mean, babies are being killed every day and it doesn't move fast enough.
I say, unfortunately, we live in a sinful world, and unfortunately, you know, we don't have a concept of God's time and when that this is expected to be completely overturned. I think it's a terrible, heart-wrenching thing to think that it is happening, but I don't think that people should feel distressed and not try to continue to do what we can do with the laws that are there and, you know, continue to pray for a breakthrough.
Carla, thank you very much for the call. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Up next, Kathy from St. Charles. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I agree with your last caller's comments on being excited about it. I do feel like, you know, you have to do what we're supposed to do within the law. And no, it's not happening fast enough, but if we don't do anything, it, you know, of course that wouldn't be happening fast either. And I also wanted to ask, in Mississippi, I was wondering if they have, they don't, you know, if they're getting rid of the abortion clinics, are the is the Christian community or the pro-life community still providing the abortion alternatives, pregnancy resource centers, or, you know, what is Right to Life doing, or Birthright, or, you know, Lutheran Children and Family Services? Do you know?
Well, that subject, Kathy, and thank you for the call, is addressed in a later chapter of this Frontline special that we're playing for you, and I think it's in tomorrow's segment that we're going to play tomorrow on the program. First of all, the accusation made by the pro-choice forces that, yeah, they care a lot about the baby in the womb, but they don't care one whit about the baby once it's born, and that gets responded to, and they talk a bit about the kind of care that they're giving to women and their babies when they don't have an abortion. But, you know, this is, I talked to a pro-life group last weekend, and I talked about the media and the pro-life cause, and brought up this often repeated accusation that pro-lifers don't care about the baby once it's born. All they really care about is the unborn baby. And I just asked the simple question, is that true? Now, we know it's not true, but we have to be able to demonstrate it's not true as well. I mean, we can say, that's not true, that's not true, we really care. But we have to be able to demonstrate that with equal force with which we demonstrate that we care about the unborn. We know that the accusation is false, but we have to be able to demonstrate it's false. We have to be able to show people, no, it is false. And a lot of that is where we spend our money. Let's go back to the Frontline special, The Last Abortion Clinic. We just got a few minutes left in this chapter.
Okay. What religion are you? What's your denomination? Okay. And you go, does your church have strong opinions against abortion? Some? A little?
I agree. I think you should pray.
Tracy?
Yes.
Is that you? You'll come in here with me.
I just want you to know this, that terminating the pregnancy requires strength and courage, okay? And that's something that you need to give some thought to. If you decide that this is the right decision for you and your family, it sounds like it is going to require strength and courage on your part. Okay?
How are you?
Okay.
Assuming you'd rather be anywhere but here right now.
Tracy is 27 years old and has come here today seeking an abortion.
Before we get into this, I want you to did you hear that? I mean, first of all, the woman who's counseling her says, terminating this pregnancy is going to require strength and courage. when this woman is probably terrified, the last thing she's got is courage at this point. What she's doing, and I think this is borne out again and again and again by women, both pro-choice and pro-life, who've had abortions, who will tell you to a woman, virtually to a woman, what I did out of fear. I didn't just waltz in there. I didn't just decide on a whim one day to do this. I was terrified. And what I did out of fear and out of shame and out of a sense of, one woman even told us here on the air when she was telling her story, out of a sense of just being stupid. I'd done a stupid thing and it would be stupid of me not to somehow try and make it go away. And to tell a woman who's facing that, say, you need some courage when she's terrified. And then the doctor says to her, this is the last place you want to be, right? Now, if abortion is this glorious thing that women, through which women exercise their full womanhood and their full rights, their full reproductive rights, their full ability to choose their own destinies and do with their own bodies what they will, why do these people sound so sad about it? And why are they giving this girl a pep talk? You know, it wouldn't hurt, by the way, for the pro-life community also say to these women, you know what? Having your baby will require strength and courage, too. But it's worth it.
When did you find out about the pregnancy?
I found out about 3 weeks ago.
Okay, tell me a little bit about what's going on since then.
Well, since then, my boyfriend was killed in a car accident. Mm. And so I have a lot going on with me. Mm-hmm. I pretty much have taken my son. I mean, I have one little boy. It's been really hard. He's 2.5.
Mm-kay.
And so he's just old enough to miss his daddy. And, you know, I have to do everything by myself. So I prayed about this decision. And I finally got my answer from God.
Okay, good.
And I'm very confident in what I'm coming to do. You know, I have a very good peace about it.
Okay. Have you given any thought to when you actually want to come back in for this procedure?
I'd like to as soon as possible.
I have openings tomorrow evening.
Tracy must wait at least 24 hours before she can come back for the actual procedure.
We've got some instructions on the back.
This state, like Mississippi, has an informed consent law. Meeting with this counselor is just the first step for Tracy.
Yes, ma'am. You have to speak with the doctor at least 24 hours before. It can be even a week or two before, but it has to be 24 hours before.
Women have to come in and sit in person and receive the state-mandated information.
There are two publications that the state put together.
So this requires that women come into the clinic at least twice.
It discusses how abortions are performed, both the medical procedure and the surgical procedure.
What happened was that everyone thought, what's wrong with giving women some information and letting them think about it? And that seems perfectly okay until you start looking at issues of distance.
Okay, tomorrow we have appointments at 10, 10:30 or 11, or Friday is 12 through 1:30.
Now I come back again to this medical procedure thing. Okay. This is just a stray thought, but I was in church the other day, and the pastor said, so-and-so, who's suffering from, I believe, cancer, is traveling to North Carolina, South Carolina, to talk with doctors at a university. They have a condition that requires some real specialty in medical care. And they get in their car, or they get on an airplane, and they fly there because their health is at stake. Now, that happens all the time. You don't hear people say, well, why should I have to go someplace else or across state lines to do this? You know, if you have cancer, you say, hey, I'm going across state lines. I got to find that doctor who knows what he's talking about. And here is this abortion counselor on the Frontline program saying, well, you know, it sounds like a good idea to give women all the information, but some of these women live far away, and making them wait 24 hours is a big inconvenience. Well, if you really cared, why don't you build a hotel next to your abortion clinic and put them up for free? I mean, talk about caring about the women.
Do either of those times work for you?
Trying to get child care 2 days.
What city are you in?
Trying to get a day off from work.
Do you know, what about Saturday? Would Saturday be better? Okay, I'll tell you what. Go ahead and try to get yourself set up as soon as you can for that first visit, okay? So we can do the ultrasound and tell you how long you have. It looks like the fee right now... She hung up. Part of the problem that we have with folks that are coming, that are rural and traveling long distances, the issue that she has is transportation. She said that, you know, she said she wanted to come in on Thursday or Friday, but then in giving her the times, she said she couldn't come in, and when I asked her if transportation was the problem, she said yes, and then she said, I'll just call you back. So, and it's very hard, I mean, part of the issue that we have here with how the waiting period affects women is that often we don't have the opportunity to really talk with women who where this is really an extreme burden for them. Basically, they fly below radar, and there's no real way of knowing if this woman will ever call us back. And transportation potentially is the issue that's blocking her.
Okay. What day were you interested in coming in for that first visit?
There are now fewer abortion providers in America than at any time since Roe v. Wade was decided in 1973. 87% of counties throughout the country do not have one. And this lack of providers impacts rural communities the most.
We're going to stop there. We'll pick up the next chapter tomorrow on issues, etc., of the Frontline PBS special, The Last Abortion Clinic. Fascinating stuff. I was just thinking as I was listening to the receptionist there in the abortion clinic trying to set a date with this young woman to come in and have the procedure. Have you ever tried to make a doctor's appointment? I mean, just to because you got a sore throat, maybe you feel like you might be coming down with something? I mean, how many receptionists in the doctor's office say, well, can you come in Saturday? Can you come in? What about Saturday afternoon? No, no, not Saturday afternoon. Sunday? Sunday? Monday? Tuesday? You practically have to twist their arm to get one time slot out of them. What's the urgency? Why are they so anxious to get this woman back? Her life is not at stake. She's not sick. No one's sick. If she has this, if she does not have this abortion, yes, she will have the baby. I imagine if I were really, really sick and the doctor really thought I needed to be seen, then the receptionist would be really pumping me for a time I could come in. But these women who are coming in for these abortions, they're not sick, and they don't need these abortions. We'll be right back with the second hour of Issues, Etc. We'll talk about Harry Potter.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues, Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.